Welcome to the Changing State of Talent Acquisition, where your hosts, Graham Thornton and Martin Pred, share their unfiltered takes on what's happening in the world of talent acquisition today. Each week brings new guests who share their stories on the tools, trends, and technologies currently impacting the changing state of talent acquisition. Have feedback or want to join the show? Head on over to changestate.io. And now, on to this week's episode.
All right, and we are back for another week, another episode of the Changing State of Talent Acquisition podcast. Super excited for this next guest. I know Marty is even more excited than I am. We have Lindsay Peterson on the show from Ironclad Brand Strategy. So Lindsay, welcome to the show. Would love for you to start by telling us a little bit more about your background, maybe your journey to Ironclad.
Thank you so much for that nice introduction. I'm really happy to be here too. Yeah, so my background, I grew up in a classic marketing environment. I was in the Procter & Gamble model at Clorox, and I did that. I went to Clorox right after I finished business school and spent a lot of my career there in brand management. And the, I guess, core idea in that world is that brand is how a business achieves sustainable competitive advantage, because in that environment, our products are parity in a lot of cases. You know, Clorox bleach, private label bleach are the same product. And therefore, we need to have a strong and differentiated brand so that we don't become commoditized. And so that was my upbringing, I suppose. And I started this business, Ironclad Brand Strategy, in its first form. Now, I guess it's been, 14 years. So I've been doing this for 14 years. And essentially, the insight was I saw a need among non-consumer packaged goods companies to have a North Star that was brand. And so I started working with leaders outside of consumer goods. So software and healthcare and financial services and retail that were kind of craving the focus that that kind of disciplined brand brings. And that is how I started this company. And so that's what I do every day now, is I work with leaders to articulate the precise stake that they want to put in the ground as a company, that they want their brand to be built around.
Wow, that's a great backstory, Lindsay. Graham was not kidding. I'm super excited to have you on the show. I think I mentioned to you briefly on a prep call, Lindsay, that, you know, I spent the first 15 years of my career doing market research for a small brand strategy consulting firm. And so I wasn't intimately involved in the strategy piece, but, you know, I was designing and executing and analyzing research outputs that directly fed into brand strategy. So, you know, that was kind of where I was raised in this industry. And then I made a pivot to talent acquisition and the recruitment marketing world, which, you know, was very eye-opening in many ways. And, you know, just in your intro, you said a lot of things. I was like, ooh, I want to ask her about that. And ooh, I want to ask her about this. But maybe just as a really basic starting point, because I think that would be helpful for our audience. You know, our audience is an audience of HR practitioners, talent acquisition practitioners, and the topic of quote-unquote employer brand has been a big topic in the recent history, say the last 5 years in particular, maybe the last 10 years. And it didn't really exist before then. And one of the challenges that we have as a recruitment marketing agency is educating people on what branding actually is. Sometimes people are confused about what employer brand is. And honestly, sometimes I'm confused about what employer brand is. But before we even get into the concept of employer brand, let's zoom out a bit and just talk about branding in general. Maybe you could just set the stage. You know, I imagine you encounter folks of varying backgrounds and understandings of what branding actually is. How would you explain what branding actually means in a simple way to the layman?
Yes. Oh my gosh. It's so true, Marty. It's such a big, it's a word that takes people in different directions, and sometimes wildly different directions. Sometimes I'm talking to people about brand and they think that I mean logo. Sometimes somebody, when I say the word brand, they think of naming, like naming a company. Sometimes it's like advertising, like Mad Men style advertising. Sometimes it's culture, and this is actually probably more of an intersection with employer brand. So it's, I think it's right to get crisp on what we mean by this term. So what I so to me, brand is what you stand for. It is the relationship between your business and its audience. And in my world, in the world of especially consumer brand, that audience is the customer. So what's the relationship between the customer and the business? That's kind of the traditional way of talking about brand from a like classic consumer packaged goods standpoint. But really, like if you kind of span out even farther, like well before there was such thing as consumer packaged goods companies, if we go back a couple thousand years, there is a brand for a butcher in a town that has two butchers. Each of those two butchers has a brand. One maybe is known for they're really good at, I don't know, croissants, and another is really good at something else, fresh baked, and maybe another is really good at they're known for the smile that they give to their customer. Each of these has a brand. They don't have a big marketing budget. They probably have zero marketing budget, but they do have a brand. So that the idea with creating a brand strategy is to be deliberate about what it is you want to stand for. Because you will have a brand whether you are intentional about it or not. It will happen. And I contend that by being the one to choose what that brand is, you're going to wind up with something you like better than if your market chooses for you. So kind of connecting now to employer brand, which is to me a fairly new term as well. But I think, again, like kind of back to basics, a brand is what you stand for. So an employer brand is what is it that you stand for to your employees or to your prospective employees. So you might think of it as a beacon, like this is the light. We want to attract, you know, for a consumer brand, it's we want to attract these types of consumers. Or for your employer brand, it's we want to attract and retain and make happy this a person that embodies these traits or is attracted to these traits. So they have the same meaning. It's a North Star. It's a focusing mechanism.
Yeah, I think that's great foundational knowledge. And, you know, it'll be news to a lot of the folks in our audience, I think. And I think the consumer packaged goods space is a really good example because it helps clarify what a brand is, why it's important to a business, and that it is something quite strategic and valuable and not simply a soft, fuzzy thing that marketing people talk about or do. You know, throughout my career, I've heard all those same confusions about, you know, I tell someone I do market research and I'm involved in consumer branding, and they'll say, oh yeah, we just did a new logo for our company. And it's not that logos and some of the creative executions of a brand or representations of a brand aren't part of branding, but it's really a very small slice. And what I love about the consumer packaged goods example, and let's just revisit the Clorox bleach example, because I think it's really clear. In a category like this, it's the same exact product, more or less, in terms of the physical chemistry of what's in that bottle.
Yes.
And so there's really no difference. So like you think about smartphones and you might say, well, what's the difference between an iPhone and the latest phone by Samsung, for example? Well, there are actual real differences in terms of the physicality of those two products. So that's a basis for differentiation. But when you're talking about something like Clorox bleach or just bleach as a category, it's bleach. You know, there's really no difference in terms of what the actual physical makeup of that product is. And so brand really becomes what the differentiator is. When you're a consumer at the store and you're trying to buy bleach and you see a variety of different options on the shelf and you see Clorox and you see a store brand and maybe there's a few others, why would you choose Clorox over one of these other options? And, you know, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I was reading your book recently and I think you said that, you know, in the case of Clorox, they've managed over their, 50 plus years in business to maintain a huge market share, even though they're charging, correct me if I'm wrong here, but something like almost double what the generic store brand charges for bleach. And people are willing to continue to come back and buy Clorox bleach over and over and over, even though it's more expensive. And how would you account for that? Well, that difference is what we would call brand. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You said that exactly right. I think that the insight for me here, the distinction here is that people, whether it's a consumer or an employee or a business buying on behalf of a business, they don't only buy a tangible set of features. They don't only buy, Clorox bleach, 6% sodium hypochlorite, 94% water. They're not buying sodium hypochlorite. They're buying the feeling they have after they take their whites out of the wash and see how bright and white and lovely they look. That's what they're buying. All of the intangible associations, as well as the tangible result of purchasing that. And so by empathizing with the customer, you can make that part of what it is you're offering. So it's a lot more than sodium hypochlorite. I mean, the reality is that the vast majority of things that people buy have more differentiation than Clorox bleach. You know, phones, even within Clorox, Casey Masterpiece barbecue sauce was another brand that I worked on. And not all barbecue sauces taste exactly the same. Like, there is product distinctiveness in there. The thing that is really useful to know is that customers are experiencing a holistic reward for purchasing a service or a product, not just the vinegar and tomato paste that goes into the barbecue sauce, but what it feels like to share food with loved ones, outdoors, the first official day of summer. That's what they're buying. And, it would be akin to as a prospect or an employee thinking that the salary that you pay them is the only reason that they're working there, right? There's a lot of intangible elements, maybe even mostly, that made it a compelling proposition for that employee.
Right, right. Well, I think this is a good reminder that, strong brands, whether we're talking a consumer brand or an employer brand, resonate on a deeply personal level. It's almost like if you're very loyal to a brand, it can almost become part of your identity. Getting back to my days in market research, we used to use a technique, and I don't know if it's still in favor, called laddering research, where you would take, often it was in the CPG space. So you take, toilet paper was a favorite example of mine, where we were trying to understand why people buy different brands of toilet paper, and not just at the functional level. So at the functional level, you have things like it's double ply, it's triple ply, doesn't shed, you don't get the white little pieces of things dangling. It's not dusty. It's quite soft. It's scented. And so we'd ask people, why did you choose this brand of toilet paper over another one? And they'd say, well, I think it's much softer. And then my job as the researcher was to keep asking more and more probing why questions. Well, in the case of toilet paper, it gets quite personal. It's just like, well, why is it important to you to have soft toilet paper? Like, you could buy the other stuff. Like, what does it say about you that you buy soft toilet paper? And they would say, well, it's more comfortable on my skin, and I think my kids like it. And then you'd say, well, why is it important to you to do things that your kids like? I mean, I'm doing a poor job of explaining it, but the idea is that you continue to try to ladder up, that's the name of the technique, to try to go from these very functional things. So in the case of employer brand, it would be things like compensation and benefits, and try to connect those to actually higher order things that actually get down to the level of personal identity, or if you want to use, Maslow's hierarchy, self-actualization.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Maslow's hierarchy of needs is kind of the backbone of a brand strategy, or the ladder, a brand ladder, like you were describing. People don't buy long battery life for their phones. They buy the fact that they don't have to charge it twice a day. And because they don't have to charge it twice a day, they have more time to hang out with their kids. And because they have more time to hang out with their kids, they feel like a better parent. So we human beings are meaning-seeking machines. And so when we do purchase something or make a decision to enter into a relationship with a company, whether it's as an employee or whether it's as, you know, a member of a business, that decision is governed by both rational and emotional needs. And sometimes they're so emotional that it's like it's a human value. Like, I'm the kind of person who buys toilet paper that is good to the earth, or I'm the kind of person who buys the most luxurious toilet paper on the market, or I'm the kind of person who buys the cheapest kind of toilet paper because why would I spend money on that? Those kind of identity reinforcers are quite motivating to people, even though they likely won't have the words for it. You know, when you do a laddering exercise like you were just describing, Marty, I bet that they needed to think a little bit before they answered those questions higher up. So they are operating, you know, this is at a very deep level. So just because they can't readily articulate it doesn't mean that it's not helping drive their decision making.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. Well, there's a lot of ways we can go with this conversation. I think just to circle back to another thing you said, in, you know, when you were sort of setting the stage for what branding is, and this is something that we always remind our clients. I mean, given the nature of employer brand, it is relatively new. Not all organizations have been thinking about employer brand very long. Oftentimes we encounter organizations that are suddenly just now getting up to speed and saying, hey, I've noticed a lot of people on LinkedIn talking about employer brand. We should probably have one. And the first thing that we always tell them is, well, you kind of have one whether you have been paying attention or not. You know, it is really kind of a relationship that you have with your audience, whether that audience is an employee or a customer. And that relationship exists whether or not you've been, you know, taking an active part in curating the conversation or not. That's kind of how we like to think about it. You know, you've done business with a certain with your customers. They have a certain opinion of what it's like to do business with you. They have an awareness of what the competitive landscape might be, why they might choose other people who are offering what you're providing. And there's a reason that they're choosing to do business with your brand or choosing not to continue doing business with your brand. And that is kind of what your brand is. So oftentimes the first step is a process of discovery. It's almost like therapy. Like, you know, I have a certain personality or I'm casting off a certain perception to the people that I'm doing business with. What do they actually think of me? And of course, that's where market research is quite important. Not really a question. I just think it's really important to remind people that, you know, branding isn't just something that exists if you pay attention to it. You know, again, maybe this is a misnomer because of the focus on the visual assets of the brand, like the logo. So people say, you know, oh, we just did a logo refresh. That's branding. Reality is your company stands for something in the minds of your audience, regardless of whether you're paying attention to that or not.
Yes. I mean, exactly. That's exactly right. It's kind of, I mean, it's back to this idea of brand as a relationship between a business and its audience. Whether or not it is a good relationship, there is one. Whether or not it is a clear relationship where both parties are clear on what they're getting from the other, there is a relationship. The difference is that one is intentional and one is not. So by kind of, I think the process even before market research is that kind of step number zero is becoming self-aware. So self-aware of the problem or of the lack of clarity and the pain that the business may be experiencing because of that lack of clarity. So that's kind of the first thing, like the antecedent to even market research is like the realization that it's important and that it, because it takes courage to do this. It takes courage to put a fine point on what it is that you want to stand for, what you want your brand to be. It really is kind of a vulnerable thing to do and requires humility and curiosity. So that's the first thing I think. And then it's like, yeah, like with that humility and curiosity, let's learn like what is the perception of us and what is this audience, employees, future employees, customers, consumers, what do they want? And how well are we doing against that? And what do we want? And how well are they doing against that? Those kind of early provocative questions are what kind of makes something really honest and therefore resonant.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And, you know, I think you're kind of alluding to, you know, a question that we wanted to get to. You know, you talk about the lack of clarity in, you know, in brand, and, you know, many times organizations are just, you know, unsure where or how to start. You know, maybe this is a good time to ask, you know, you talk a lot about an organization's brand and, you know, the concept of it being, you know, a brand being its North Star. You know, so maybe you can elaborate on, you know, what do you mean by that? And, you know, how does this concept of, you know, North Star help inform, you know, business decisions or business directions even?
Yeah. Yes. So the most powerful brands, the ones that create the most value over long periods of time, are the ones that use brand to guide all decision making. So not merely messaging or marketing, but what new products should we develop? What types of companies should we think about partnering with? What should our acquisitions be? What should our pricing look like? Who should we distribute through? What types of channels should we use to reach our audience? So if you think like, and listeners, if you think right now about a brand that you as a consumer really like, maybe love even, if you think about that brand and the relationship that you have with it, I bet that very little of it has to do with marketing, and that a lot of it has to do with the feeling that you have because you're in relationship with that business, because you're using their product or their service or their offering. And so that is a reflection of a thousand little decisions, that maybe million little decisions that somebody is making day in and day out about that. So for example, Starbucks still has a brand that is about interpersonal connection over a wonderful cup of coffee. And so it's not just that's not just something they say. That informs which growers they work with. It informs their real estate strategy. Which locations should we pick out? It informs their interior design, having seats across from one another. It informs their barista training and their culture building at a store level. And there, I think, let's see, it was in 2008, I believe, when Starbucks United States closed all company-owned stores for a day to retrain the baristas to make a cup of coffee. And it cost $6 million to Starbucks Corporation to do that. That was based on the insight that the coffee quality was eroding, that the experience was eroding. So that's not wasn't really a marketing thing. That was a leadership decision that, hey, if we're going to uphold our promise, we need to do something. We need to retrain our people to deliver on that promise, right? So that with that interpersonal connection as a North Star for Starbucks, they made the really difficult and expensive decision to close all their stores for a day. So that's an example of really, you know, prioritizing the things that will make your brand promise ever more true, not just when it's easy, but especially when it's hard, when it's expensive, like that Starbucks example.
Yeah, that's a great example, Lindsay. And I think that really brings it home to what branding is outside of the marketing department. I mean, if you're being strategic about your brand, it's not just something that executives might check in on from time to time. It really is sort of the guiding force, or the North Star, as you're calling it, behind lots of strategic decisions in the business. Because again, the question comes down to is, how are we creating this kind of emotional resonance and experience that we're known for with our end customer? And that really reverberates across all aspects of the business. You know, I think it's easy to see in some cases, like the Starbucks example you gave about eroding coffee quality and then making a hard decision. But it's also easy to see when you think about, you know, we're trying to, a company like Starbucks, you know, we're trying to provide a certain type of experience. Well, we've got to make sure that our employees that are on the front line are not only aware of the kind of experience we're actually trying to provide, but have the training and knowledge to provide that kind of experience in a very consistent fashion, which obviously is sort of a segue, I think, nicely into the idea of employer brand. You know, in the world of employer brand, of course, we're focused on a slightly different audience. Maybe the question isn't what's in it for the customer, it's what's in it for the employee. And, you know, honestly, I think we are stuck as an industry being relatively stuck on that functional level. You know, so you see a lot of organizations, if you look on their career sites, you know, they'll mention the functional benefits, the compensation, the, you know, the insurance, some of those different variables. And then the ones that are getting beyond the functional level tend to be very, very generic. They're not differentiating at all. You know, if you look at the core values, quote unquote, of many, many organizations in the Fortune 500, even look on their career site, and there are these very lofty ideas like we stand for integrity and excellence and, you know, all of these things. And I don't think they mean a whole lot. You know, even if they're true, everyone's saying them. And so it doesn't really tell you much about what this company stands for. So that's a long preamble, but I guess the question I want to ask you is, do you even think it makes sense to have a separate idea called an employer brand? Or do you think what we're calling employer brand, as far as you understand it, is just a specific iteration of the corporate, the master corporate brand? Maybe I'm using the wrong terms, but I think you get my point.
Yeah.
That's targeted at this very specific audience, which is employees. So it has a lot of the same sort of DNA or foundational elements, and maybe the messaging and some of the specifics are a little bit tweaked because, again, we're not talking to customers, but we're talking to employees or prospective employees.
Yeah. I feel really strongly that it is ideal when you can to have one brand, for a company to have one brand that is the, you know, at the highest level, we'll use the ladder idea, at the highest rung of the ladder, it unifies customers and employees, or prospective employees, prospective customers. That is ideal because it is the most efficient. You know, it's more efficient to have one brand than two brands. It's also more authentic and credible, and creates more goodwill. So when you can have a single brand, and so the employer brand and the customer brand have the same overarching meaning, that is definitely worth trying to achieve. So, like, let's take the toilet paper ladder example, Marty, that you gave. If it's a toilet paper and it's a toilet paper that is eco-friendly, it is, it's made with all renewable, you know, bamboo. And so the top of the benefit ladder for the customer is, I'm the kind of person who protects the earth. So I'm going to buy this kind of toilet paper because I'm the kind of person that protects the earth. And that reinforces the kind of person that I want to be. It brings me a little bit closer to the person that I want to be, to the life that I want to live. That can be the same North Star for prospective employees. I'm the kind of person who works for companies that protects the earth. This company is making something out of all renewable resources. Therefore, they're protecting the earth. And by being part of it, I get to be a little bit more the kind of person that I want to be. That's a single North Star that governs both the customer and the employee space, both, I guess, brands, if you will. When you can do that, I really, really like to see that. It also creates a cohesive culture, because customers can perceive, I mean, especially for smaller companies, customers will perceive any inauthenticity. So, you know, if it's like the customer thinks that she's buying something that is protecting the earth, but the employees, you know, the office trash system doesn't have recycling or doesn't have compostable, then it just erodes the trust in the overarching promise, right? So, and similarly, if the employee is like, I'm working for this company that is making the earth better because we're bringing to the market bamboo toilet paper, But in their office environment, back in the day when we actually worked at offices, and maybe someday we will again, in the office environment, they look around and they see that there isn't an effective recycling system. There isn't a compost system. The snacks in the refrigerator are made with heavy plastic packaging. That also erodes the promise that is made to the employee. So the real magic is when there's this single unifying idea and you deliver on it with everything. So with everything that the customer experience of the product of the brand, and also everything that the employee experiences of the product or the brand. When those things all line up, that's when you really get that exponential relationship warmth.
Yeah, I love grounding it in examples because I just think it makes it really clear. And I think the, you know, eco-friendly toilet paper is a good one. I think the pushback you'll sometimes get, and you know, you get this on the consumer branding side too, is like, well, for some people, it's just toilet paper. And, you know, some of the customers that are buying this bamboo toilet paper are just buying it because either they're not price sensitive at all, or maybe they're very price sensitive and there was a coupon or a sale, or who knows, any number of reasons. There wasn't product available from other brands at the time. You know, you can come up with reasons that really have very little to do with the brand, why someone might purchase that brand. And I think you can say a similar thing when you think about why people choose to work for a company. You know, even a company like that makes this eco-friendly and, you know, is making this product. Yes, you know, especially as you get into leadership and some of the upper level positions, I think finding people who are passionate about that mission is absolutely crucial for the business. You wouldn't want somebody that's overseeing procurement for all your recycled paper that's going into producing these products to not care at all about the environment. That wouldn't make much sense, and it certainly wouldn't be good for the brand. But at the very basic level, the people who are the janitors of this company, you know, they may not care about eco-friendly at all. And so some people kind of use that as a way of saying, like, does the brand really mean anything if we don't see it at all levels of the organization? Rambling a bit, but like, I wonder if you just have any thoughts about that, because it strikes me as a similar continuum with that you see with consumer brands, where, you know, a company has a whole host of customers. Some of them are very loyal to your brand for very good reasons. Others are just happen to be purchasing it along the way. And in the same way, when you think about who's working for a company, some people are really bought into that mission on a deep personal level. Others are just taking it because I need a job and I got to pay my bills.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally hear that. That is very true in consumer brand as well, and B2B brand as well. I think of it as, you know, like, why do we do this? What's the utility of this exercise? It's to attract more of the kind of people that we want to attract. You know, the sweet spot employee, the sweet spot customer. Who is that person? What is their life like? What are their needs? What are their desires? What are their current behaviors? And how can we kind of use our own empathy to attract more of those people? And just like, you know, you think of like a dartboard. I use this example a lot, of a dartboard, where you've got the bullseye. You've got the bullseye on the dartboard, and you get the most points if you hit the bullseye. You get the most points if you attract the absolute ideal employee. But by aiming at the bullseye, you attract more people onto the dartboard at all. So this is not an exercise. This is not about like saying, hey, this is not a letting perfect be the enemy of the good exercise. This is about setting up the conditions to attract what you want to attract. Will you 100% of the time hit the bullseye? Likely not, but the more you do this, the closer you get. And if you don't do it at all, that's a guarantee that you won't keep getting closer to the bullseye. So I think the question I would start with is, why would you want to do this at all? Like, what's the business problem that this strategy is seeking to alleviate? What's it going to do that's going to help the business? And is it worth it? And usually the answer is, you know, we want more of this type of customer. We want more of this kind of employee. Well, if you want to have that, then you have to earn it by articulating what it is that you're going to bring to that person, and then actually bringing it to that person day in and day out. That's how you earn those sweet spot employees. And there will be people on the outer rims of the dartboard too. There will be customers that are not ideal customers. There will be employees that are not exactly what you had in mind when you were describing the ideal employee. I think, you know, over time, you'll have less and less of that as a problem. And that's actually the point of doing this. That's kind of the whole, that's the whole game right there.
Yeah, that's great. So first of all, I think we've got some great analogies that are coming out of this with the dartboard analogy. And like, I already wrote down a toilet paper ladder a few times. So I don't know how I'm going to fit that into my daily examples. But I do want to ask one question that I think is very related to this, Lindsay. So, you know, since we have you here, I'm curious. All right, let's say you're a company, you know, and you're trying to create the business case for, you know, investing in your brand or investing in the employer brand. You know, here's a real scenario. You're your company, you've been in a market for 20 years, and, you know, let's say you've been selling widgets for 20 years in a market. And, you know, let's just say, hey, for the last 10 years, you've been selling widgets that people don't like. But hey, now you're better. What do you do, right? Like, what do you do knowing that people perceive your brand in a, you know, they already have a preconceived notion. Like, you've spent 15 years selling widgets that people don't like, widgets that don't work. Be like, you have a poor brand in the industry. Like, what do you do in that scenario where, you know, your legacy organization, your brand just isn't that good?
Yeah, I just feel so sorry for the person who runs a business where they sell widgets that nobody wants. That just sounds like the most soul-sucking experience ever. I mean, what first comes to mind to me is, well, it's kind of, again, brand is a relationship. So you've had a really poor, you know, say it's a friendship. You've had a really unrewarding friendship for 10 years, and now it's you want it to be more rewarding, and so you're putting more into it. So that's, you've improved your widget. You need the other person to be in relationship with you. So you need those people, that friend in this scenario, to see you for this new thing that you're bringing. But you have to earn that, right? So it has to truly be better and different. And you have to make it easy and rewarding for them to engage in a new conversation with you. So, I mean, what you're describing is a really hard thing to do, to reposition yourself. The way that I would think about it is to embrace all of the elements of positioning. So it's not just your product, you know, the four P's of positioning: product, price, place, and promotion. You don't just have a new product. You're also pricing it differently. You're offering it in different channels, different distribution methods, different ways of accessing it. And promotion, you're talking about it in different ways. You're talking about it in different places, different channels. So it's not just about having a better product. It's about wrapping the audience around in what this new promise is and being very, very humble about what you're asking them to do is actually a pretty big ask. To date, we have disappointed you. Now we're not going to disappoint you. That's a really big ask of somebody, especially if they've been burned. So my encouragement would be to have a huge amount of curiosity and humility for the customer, and also an expectation that this is not going to be just this switch that you flip, that you've got a lot of work to do to earn your way back.
I love that. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that maybe Widget was standing in for an employee without naming any names for a certain client that we worked with recently. But I think that's spot on. I mean, you know, I think there's a sense often in recruitment marketing where it's like, we can buy our way out of the problem. Let's get a fresh logo. Let's put up a new career site. Let's tell people how great everything is. And then sometimes you ask them, well, like, what has actually changed about the employee experience? And it's usually crickets, or sometimes it's crickets, or there's very little that's changed. And, you know, I think your point is well taken, Lindsay, that to rehabilitate a brand, whether it's a consumer brand or a employer brand, is not a small task. It probably does start with a level of authenticity, saying, hey, we know we weren't so great. We heard you. We're making a change. Even then, it's still a tall order. I mean, I think it needs to start with just an honest reckoning of how you've let people down, that you are making a big ask of them to consider trying you again. And it has to have, you know, many different components to it. You know, it would be you know, a huge ad budget, I think, if you're going to try to rehabilitate a brand. Not that it can't be done, and I'm sure there are great examples of haven't been done on the consumer side, but it's not a quick fix by any means.
And I'll also add to that, to your summary, Marty, that it takes being truly leadership driven. So it has to come from the top. In order for it to be a promise you can truly deliver on, it needs to have the buy-in and energy all the way at the top. So in order for it to be authentic, because the last thing you want to do is go back to these people, you know, kind of like the boy who cried wolf one too many times, you know, make a promise that you again don't deliver on. And in order to always deliver on a promise that's hard to deliver on, you need air cover from the C-suite to make that happen. So that's another kind of best practice with this, is ensure that the leadership is bought in to the need to do this and bought into the things that you're going to do to make the transformation.
Yeah, I think, you know, I love that you're focusing on leadership, because that's something that we say often to our clients as well. And I think it's a good segue to a last question. I know we're a little bit short on time here, and I want to be mindful of your time, Lindsay. But, you know, one of the ironies, I think, of recruitment marketing and employer branding, and this isn't true of all organizations, but we see it often enough that it's quite curious to us. As you said, a brand is a relationship with an audience. It's a relationship with a customer. And the strongest brands out there are very aware of the value that they're giving to customers, and they use that as a North Star for making decisions, large and small, about how to operate the business. Probably one of the most important things, especially if you think about a consumer brand, let's go back to the Starbucks example, is who are you hiring to deliver that value to your end customers? I can think of, you know, there's lots of important pieces of a business, but if you're trying to provide a certain experience to deliver that value to customers, it's of utmost importance who you're hiring and that you're training and onboarding those people so they understand the value that they're charged with delivering to those customers. And yet what we often see is that recruiting is kind of in its silo in many organizations. You know, it's an organization that doesn't necessarily communicate often with the marketing department. Many of the people that are in the recruiting department, not all, but many, may have these, you know, rather superficial understandings of what a brand actually is. Maybe it is just about logo for them. And they're the ones that are out in the field actually hiring the next people that are going to deliver that value to customers. I mean, this is kind of stunning to me, because it's just an example of a huge disconnect here. You know, these are, again, are the people who are deliver the value, and the people who are finding them probably have very little to do with the people who are in the branding side of the business, which are articulating that value. What do you make of that? And, you know, do you have any thoughts about how to bridge gaps between recruiting and branding?
I just 100% agree with you. They need to be either one in the same or intentionally considered. And particularly, I mean, like a retail business model like Starbucks, when like there's actually like a true intersection between the customer experience of the brand and the employee delivery of the experience of the brand. And if those are not tied together, you just won't have a business anymore, because you'll lose your differentiation, and customers can smell disingenuity just like employees can. So I just 100% agree. It's so important. And I'm also in agreement with you that it's stunning how rare it is for those two overlapping elements to be given intentional thought. I think, I mean, the way that I would recommend, so like one thought, just first of all, I don't think employer brand is a known phrase among all marketers. So you might have to educate them. That's number one. And number two is just to recognize that you actually want the same thing, like, right? Like the, whether it's marketers, whether it's, you know, the CFO, the CMO, the chief people officer, we all are trying to create value for this business and for employees and for customers. And so kind of drawing on that shared interest among them, like, look at the untapped value out there, because we haven't created synergy between our brands, because we haven't identified what our employer brand is going to stand for. If we do that, look at the value that we can bring, both economic and cultural, to this business. You know, quantify it if you're trying to quantify, if your C-suite audience is the CFO in particular. You know, what can we save by doing this, and what are we losing by not doing this? And I suspect that there would be a lot of receptiveness among marketing leadership to work with the people leadership to define the brand in a unified way. That's my kind of spidey senses of what these leaders would want, you know, especially when this is a, you know, like Starbucks, a branded house, it's a single brand, whether it's the employer or the customer, it benefits everybody. To have that focus and that clarity benefits everybody. So you might need to bring them along, you might need to educate them, but my sense is that there would be a huge welcome to that idea, because it would create value for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the reasons we were so excited to have you on the show is that we've had a lot of people that sit in the employer branding space within the organization, and we've asked them these questions from their side. You know, what strategies have you used to make connections with marketing? And I think the reality is, HR and talent acquisition don't always have the best reputation with an organization. They're almost looked down upon. Again, there's plenty of exceptions. I'm not saying it across the board. But I think sometimes the folks in the marketing department sometimes look down upon talent acquisition. And this is probably a result of poor leadership, really. But it's just somebody you call when you need to fill, you know, put a butt in the seat. And you're always asking them, you know, how can we get this done cheaply and quickly? And really, as you're saying, you know, this is a really critical function for the business. We need to have these teams talking to one another and recognizing that, you know, there's arguably no more important work for the organization than finding that next generation of talent who is going to deliver that value to the customer. It seems like a connection and a bridge that needs to be built. And I know I'm hopeful. You know, we've said a lot of things about how they're not communicating, but I do think that we'll see more and more integration between recruiting and marketing as we look to the future. At least that's my hope.
Me too. Me too. And I feel optimistic about it as well.
That's great. Well, hey, I really enjoyed listening to, you know, both. you know, it's per usual, I think we always have, this was a great episode for me. Thanks for letting
me. Thanks for coming on our podcast, Graham, Lindsay, and I. Really appreciate it.
Hey, I pushed record, and you know, I'll, you know, sadly for the two of you, I'm going to have to push stop at some point here soon. But yeah, with that, I think that is a great logical place to stop. And I will say, you know, Lindsay, really, really appreciate you coming on and bringing, you know, I think it's a super unique perspective and an important one, you know, to the conversation on, you know, branding and organizations in general, right? I guess we'll leave with, you know, the final question. It's an easy one, I hope. You know, where can people find you, learn a little bit more about Ironclad Brand Strategy online?
Thank you, Graham. And thank you, both of you, for having me on your show. This was such a fun conversation. I've learned a lot from both of you. Yeah, I have a website, ironcladbrandstrategy.com, and I send out a monthly newsletter if you want to subscribe to it. I kind of talk about various thought-provoking topics in brand and leadership. A lot of what we've been talking about is exactly of that vein. So please come onto my website, subscribe to my newsletter. I have a book called Forging an Ironclad Brand, which is something you can buy on Amazon and all those types of places, where I talk about what is a brand, why should a leader care about a brand, and how do you build one. So that's another resource for listeners interested in going deeper.
Great. Well, and I'll just plug your book a little harder here, because I think it's really a must read for audiences. Like, don't be scared off by the idea of branding and you maybe don't know what it means. I think it's valuable to people who have experience in branding, but I also think it has a lot of value for people who maybe don't know much about branding at all. And it really makes the case for what branding is, lays out the concept of a North Star and how it informs business decisions really well, even for someone who maybe hasn't spent more than 15 minutes thinking about brand. So check it out.
Awesome. Thanks, Marty.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Lindsay. Again, look forward to another conversation, hopefully in the very near future. So thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you again, both of you. Take care.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. As always, head on over to changestate.io or shoot us a note on all the social media. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll check you guys next week.